The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The following program presents and discusses general mental health topics. This program should not be interpreted as medical advice. Please consult your doctor if you have any questions about topics discussed on this program and if they apply to your situation. Welcome to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. We will talk about and feature a variety of behavioral health issues. We also invite you, the listener, to contribute to the discussion through calls as well. Now, here is your host, Dr. Sarita Rao.
Today, we will talk about the use of integrative medicine and alternative medicine to treat child and adolescent patients with mental health issues. You are listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao, and our guest today is Dr. Tracy Krasnow. So increasingly in the United States, people are becoming more aware of a variety of alternative or integrative medicine interventions, treatments that can be used to treat illness, both mental and physical, and also to promote healing. Many of these involve lifestyle changes, including dietary modifications, the use of food as medicine, stress reduction techniques, and then other more specific treatments. The use of herbal remedies from various medicinal plants have existed and been developed in societies all over the world. Some of these schools of traditional medicine have ancient roots from early civilizations, such as acupressure or acupuncture and other forms of Chinese medicine and Ayurveda in India. These have miraculously been passed down by practitioners for thousands of years and are used even today almost in the same form as they were used in the past. So what role can these alternative and integrative medicine techniques play for patients and families in today's world of high-tech medicine? In the behavioral health field, we still use slower, more traditional techniques, such as various forms of psychotherapy, and these are still the mainstay for many conditions, such as substance use disorders. And we have many more medications today in the field of psychiatry than we did even in the 1940s. These are often essential in the treatment of more severe conditions, such as psychosis and severe depression, or the patient who is depressed and suicidal, or even very anxious. And antidepressants, for example, are a great set of medications. They often produce significant and dramatic improvements for depression and anxiety for many patients. However, sadly, there are a smaller but significant group of patients who are able to get only limited improvement or no improvement, even with the use of two antidepressants. For patients such as these, and also for patients with any type of mental health condition, whether it's acute or chronic, alternative and integrative medicine techniques may be very helpful. The American Academy of Pediatrics reports that families use what's known as CAM, complementary and integrative medicine, in 20 to 40% of healthy children and in over 50% of children with chronic, recurrent, and incurable illnesses. Even though there's this high rate of CAM usage, families often don't tell their healthcare provider of what treatments they're using. This can be unsafe because even herbal remedies are potent and they can interact with allopathic and mainstream medications. Sometimes the practitioners don't know much more about integrative medicine than the families themselves. They may know very little about it. It's estimated by the American Academy of Pediatrics that children with chronic, disabling, or recurrent conditions are those who have higher CAM use. And there is also widespread use of complementary and integrative medicine by families where children have mental health diagnoses. So studies have suggested that CAM usage can be at nearly 50% of children with autism and 20% of children with ADHD. These families also often do not mention to their psychiatrist that they're using alternative medicine techniques. Today, most of us do not know that much about these alternative treatment medicine modalities. How do we go about making a decision as to which practitioner to pick, what interventions to utilize? Are they going to interact with any allopathic or mainstream medications that we're on? To help us gain more understanding of the use of integrative medicine techniques in pediatric psychiatry, we have as a guest today Dr. Tracy Krasnow. Dr. Krasnow is trained in pediatrics, child psychiatry, and adult psychiatry, and his unique training gives him a very good understanding of developmental issues in children, what illnesses look like as they grow older, and he also is very knowledgeable about integrative and alternative medicine. So, Dr. Krasnow, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, let me ask you a general question. Why do you think families or parents of children or teenagers, and I include teenagers when I say children, with any kind of mental health condition, why should they explore alternative medicine?
Well, I think there are probably two big issues that drive use of alternatives or CAMS or alternative medicine. I think one is sort of fear in general, where there's been a lot of talk in the media about psychotropic medications and their side effects. And I think when it comes to treating children with these medications, that it really scares parents. And, you know, they look to other potentially safer ways to treat their children. I think on the other side, there's also sort of frustration and sort of desperation when parents have children that either respond partially to treatment or don't respond at all, and you know they're very very ill and very symptomatic. Medicine doesn't seem to offer them the help they want or need, and they sort of turn to these alternatives in order to try to get their children to function better.
But in your opinion, these could actually be very helpful to the patients, am I right?
Yes.
You know, we're seeing what seems to be an explosion of child psychiatry conditions in our, you know, just in our state, all over the country today. I don't know if it just seems that way because of better diagnosis or are certain conditions actually increasing in terms of, like, their prevalence, like autism or ADHD. But either way, like, you know, even if parents are pursuing traditional medicine, it would be good to integrate certain things that, such as dietary changes, food modifications, and see if it helps the child or not. It seems extremely benign.
I mean, for the most part, in some cases, they do seem very benign, and that's sort of, I think, the approach I take. You know, when I talk about, you know, potentially using alternative medicines and things like that, you know, is there a risk? Or, you know, are these things safe? And in a lot of situations, they are safe. So, you know, if there's a potential for benefit, you know, why not try them?
Can you give us some examples of what kind of things you might recommend? I mean, you can give us specific or general suggestions. What kind of things do you recommend, let's say, if parents come to you and their child has ADHD or autism?
For conditions like ADHD, there's been a lot of flurry of stuff in the literature about, you know, better diet choices, you know, more vitamins and minerals, less carbohydrates, you know, decreasing straight sugar, artificial additives and preservatives in the diet, things like that. There's also sort of natural things that can help with neurological functioning in general. There's also been a lot of talk about omega-3 fatty acids and, you know, B vitamins and B12 and folate, you know, all of these sorts of things have some potential to help in something like ADHD.
That sounds great. And, you know, some of these I recommend to my adult patients, like, you know, if they are depressed and, you know, why not add a fish oil supplement? You know, it would help their heart health, you know, may even help their joints. And I recommend B vitamins to some of my more depressed patients, sometimes even just as an adjunct, you know. And then some people recommend, you know, judicious use of sunlight and also exercise, like aerobic exercise, like walking for 20 minutes to reduce anxiety. You know, I know you've been a big proponent of using melatonin, for instance, for children suffering from insomnia instead of automatically turning to more pharmaceutical or allopathic sleep medication. So do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I think even from the time I started practicing, I noticed, I sort of in general try to start with the easiest things first as far as, you know, interventions, what has the least risk, what, you know, replicates what the body does naturally. And in the example of melatonin, you know, it's something the body already makes, and in some cases, you know, they don't make enough, or, you know, in some ways melatonin acts like a biological clock and tells our body when it's supposed to be asleep. So sometimes it's, you know, simply resetting your watch in order to get your body back on a more normal cycle. And for some reason in children, they found that children seem to be more responsive to melatonin. It seems to lose its effectiveness with age, but even some adults will respond to it. So, you know, it's a situation where, you know, you're sort of trying to, you know, replicate what the body does naturally, and in a lot of cases it works.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I like your explanation because it's true. Melatonin, many people don't know this when they buy it at a health food store. It's actually something our body makes naturally, and it's the light dark hormone of the brain, although most people think of it as a herbal medication or supplement for sleep, but it's actually in our brains and it regulates light and dark. You know, so do you think our modern day world has just become way too artificial because, you know, our lights never turn off, and this is true for many of us who are even aware of the risks, you know. Our lights never turn off, our electronics never turn off, we're exposed to these bright screens. And would you say that our children lead a far more structured existence today than children, let's say, 50 years ago? Are we asking too much of them in terms of holding down calm, quiet behavior and attention?
Wow, that's a big question.
Well, we can always discuss it on the other side of the break as well, you know, but I just wanted to at least get you started.
Sure. I think with most cultures, we're always trying to, you know, get the next biggest thing, and certainly technology and medicine has, you know, come a long way in the last 100 years, and certainly we, you know, step right up to the plate and you know, start using whatever we have access to, and it's new and exciting and things like that, and certainly I think, you know, in this day and age, we certainly push our kids hard, and we expect them to, you know more than we did, and you know, to function better than we did, and behave better than we did. So I think we do ask a lot of kids, and it's a lot of pressure, and it's hard for them to keep up without and make good choices at the same time. I mean, there's, you know, making good diet choices and finding ways to relax and stop and unplug from, you know, the internet or other technologies and things like that, it can be very difficult.
It can be very difficult, even for us as adults who are aware of all this. And it can be very difficult to make good food choices, like unprocessed food, in a world where there's so much processed food that's just so readily available and convenient.
Yeah, it's difficult when there's a convenience store or McDonald's on, you know, every corner.
Yes, yes. I think we're coming up to a break, so maybe when we come back to the other side, we can talk more about, you know, specific treatments. So for listeners, you know, please find my show's Facebook page, Dr. Sarita Rao Radio Show, and you can find out more about upcoming guests and topics. If you like my Facebook page, then updates will show up on your Facebook page for future topics. You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. Please join us again on the other side of this short break.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
Each week, Jimmy Gould brings you the stories and the people that you want to hear about. Tune in to A Current Life to hear about the journey to success, how our guests became the people they are today, and the highs and lows they experienced along the way. Each hour will leave you inspired and entertained as Jimmy gets up close and personal with every week's guest and shares ideas you can identify with and apply to your own life. A Current Life with Jimmy Gould airs Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Do you have undue stress in your life? It may be more than just a hormonal imbalance. It could also be related to environmental factors, genetic modifications, chemicals, radiation, and more. We are living with revolutionary changes in our environment, and outside influences have just as much to do with stress and poor health as internal influences. Join Dr. Shanhong Liu every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Vibrant Life, Restore the Roots of Health on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, back to today's program.
You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. Today we're talking to Dr. Tracy Krasnow, child psychiatrist, on the use of integrative medicine and alternative medicine to treat children and adolescents with mental health issues. Dr. Krasnow has unique training. He is trained as a pediatrician, adult psychiatrist, and child psychiatrist, and he's very knowledgeable about integrative medicine. So, Dr. Krasnow, one question I had is, most doctors, know very little about integrative medicine. I mean, I certainly don't consider myself any expert, although I do try to recommend some things that I feel comfortable with, like melatonin for sleep or fish oil capsules, B vitamins, you know, things like that. Or if there are people who are really not getting better, I might recommend that they, you know, consider Chinese medicine like acupressure, acupuncture. But sometimes patients will tell me that they're taking this or that supplement, and I will try to look it up and make sure that it doesn't have any overt interaction with any allopathic meds I'm prescribing. But sometimes I don't know 100% what they are, and I'll tell them that. So what advice do you have for parents of children of all ages, you know, who are going to their pediatrician? I mean, they should tell them if they're taking something too really dangerous not to. But what do they do if their pediatrician doesn't know much about integrative medicine? And are there pediatricians or child psychiatrists who really are against it in today's world?
Well, I think there are always, you know, people that fall on both sides of the issue, you know, that some people, you know, are more liberal and say, you know, if it has a possibility of helping, and it won't hurt them, let's do it. And there are other people that say if it's not medicine, you know, then it's not what we do. And You know, we don't, that's not what we practice. So, I mean, as people, adults, parents, and children may approach their pediatrician or doctor and ask them about this, and they may get either reaction. And, you know, if it's something that they're more interested in and want to pursue, then they may want to find someone that, you know, has the same philosophy that they do. Or the way I see it when people come to me and ask me these questions, that as a physician, it's my responsibility to educate myself on these different either nutritional supplements or herbs or things like that that they may be using, and find out what they do and whether they work or what the risk is.
That's a good idea. That if they really believe in this and want to try it, is an adjunct even to their traditional psychiatric medications. But their child psychiatrist or pediatrician really doesn't believe in it, then maybe they can search for another practice that is more interested in this sort of thing. So specifically, I mean, would you ever recommend? I mean, what are certain techniques that you would recommend for your child psychiatry patients? Are there any specific treatments that you ever recommend beyond the things you've mentioned already?
I typically sort of rank things in sort of sequential order. I mean, there's the substances that are like things that the body makes naturally, like the melatonin that, you know, sort of I freely sort of recommend. If, you know, if I investigate their diets and, you know, their issues there, then, you know, there's always room for, you know, recommending, you know, whole food vitamins or supplements of that nature. You know, if it all comes back to the diet. If, you know, they're not eating enough fish and things like that, then, you know, omega-3 fatty acids, you know, are good to recommend. You know, beyond that, it's sort of very, you know, situational. You know, and, you know, for, you know, such things like mild depression, you know, there are still things like, you know, St. John's wort, which is, you know, has mild antidepressant effects, which, you know, can potentially work. And I've had plenty of adolescents who want something natural to treat their depression that will ask about that. And there's been, you know, plenty of research on things like that. The families with autistic kids tend to be the ones who ask a lot more questions, because there's a lot of different research out there about, you know, whether they have metabolic dysfunction. And, you know, there's lots of different research coming out about things like that, whether, you know, shots with B12 work, or adding glutathione or other compounds that are reducing agents or decrease oxidative stress, N-acetylcysteine, chelation, hyperbarics, things like that.
Oh, that's very interesting. So what is what are some of these things like N-acetylcysteine, or N-acetylcysteine I'm more familiar with because it reduces oxidative stress, and, you know, it's also now thought of as this anti-aging you know, molecule. And I actually had a patient who came to me on NAC from another practitioner, and I didn't know anything about it, so I researched it, and, you know, I felt it was a good idea, so I continued it. But what about things like chelation? Like, how is it done? Like, what exactly is it, through medication or is it some other process? And what does it do in the body?
Well, chelation is something that in medicine we do for there are medical illnesses that we use this for still to this day. You know, if a child gets exposed to lead, then we use chelation, which is giving them a substance that will bind the lead and allows them to urinate out the lead, so it gets out of the systemic circulation and no longer affects the body. There's a disorder called Wilson's disease, which affects copper metabolism, and they also take a kind of chelating agent where, you know, it binds that extra copper and washes it out in the urine. So with chelation in kids on the autism spectrum, there's some belief that that there may be some exposure to heavy metals and that this is causing some of their neurological impairments. And there have been some studies that say, well, you know, we've tested their blood and there's no heavy metals in there. But what we often sort of don't know is that, you know, if you've been exposed briefly, then, you know, the body doesn't keep circulating it. It ends up in your tissues, in your brain, in your bones and things like that, and it's not visible necessarily. So some practitioners believe that if you do a challenge test where you give a chelating agent and then collect urine and check for heavy metals, that you may be more likely to find heavy metals and then use chelation. Now, when you talk about chelation, there's two forms, and a lot of practitioners that are against this sort of practice sort of lump them together, when in reality, they're very different. One is like I've been talking about with the lead and Wilson's disease, where it's taken orally. So you eat it, you drink it, the medicine, and it binds to the substance, and it comes out in the urine, which is very safe. I mean, you can't it can wash out other minerals, but you can easily replace those through the GI tract and absorption. There's also a potentially more dangerous version, which is IV chelation, where they're actually injecting this substance into the bloodstream, which can pull out lots of different minerals all at once and could be potentially dangerous. But there are practitioners that do this that can do it in a safe manner. But of the two, oral chelation is definitely safer than IV chelation.
That's really great information. And the oral chelation, you're saying, is the more mainstream version, which is used in the lead poisoning and Wilson's disease.
Correct.
Right, right. Yes, lead poisoning. Yes, we do still use chelation, you know. We often forget, those of us who are not in pediatric medicine, because you just think there are hardly any kids being exposed to lead today. But there are kids who are exposed to lead, you know, either through old buildings, exposed pipes or whatever. Yes. So so this is all, like, really interesting. And then what about probiotics? I mean, that's a big thing. And, you know, we have a whole another brain in our gut because we have so many serotonin, norepinephrine receptors, and there are all these illnesses, chronic illnesses, irritable bowel syndrome, ulcerative colitis, which really have strong psychosomatic underpinnings, where a person's emotional state or stress can then, you know, cause flare-ups of these illnesses or even acid reflux, you know. And then we think of it almost as sort of a mind-body connection, but it's very biological, really. I mean, it's not even mind-body. We have all these neurotransmitter receptors in our brain, and then we have the same receptors in our gastrointestinal system. So do you ever recommend the use of probiotics? And my other question was, you know, just like the heavy metals, there's also in integrative medicine, sometimes for a variety of illnesses, upper respiratory illnesses, you know, people feel that there might be overgrowth of yeast or candida in somebody's body. Again, can't be picked up by your traditional yeast tests, but because of all the use of antibiotics and, you know, so many other food things, sugar, that people could have an overgrowth of yeast. So what do you think of the role of probiotics and just of the whole idea of resetting the gastrointestinal tract as a way of resetting, you know, the person's emotional state?
Well, this has been a very big area of research recently in the past several decades. And I think it's become a very sort of hot topic because in the past, I mean, it wasn't such a big deal. I mean, people ate food and you know, you're exposed to bacteria, normal healthy bacteria, and it populates your GI tract, and, you know, you take nutrients in, which are absorbed, and then get rid of the waste. And, you know, then came along antibiotics, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, were one of the best inventions of all time, and, you know, save a lot of lives from infections. But it also kills both the bad bacteria and the good bacteria. So, you know, when you get a course of antibiotics, then you sort of kill all the bacteria, good bacteria that may be in your GI tract as well, and sort of open your GI tract to being populated by, you know, other bacteria that may not be as helpful, like Clostridium or different kinds of yeast and things like that. So, you know, there's been talk about using things like yogurts and kefir and probiotics in pill form in order to keep a normal flora in your GI tract, which can help in a number of ways because, you know, the normal bacteria in your gut is one of the key sources of vitamin K. Some of the bacteria in your gut, you know, make vitamin K on your own and supply that for us. They also break down, you know, help break down some of the foods we eat and things like that, which can be good sometimes and can also be bad in certain things like lactose intolerance and things like that. But there's a lot of different issues, and the GI tract in general, especially with changes in diet. I mean, we're supposed to take nutrients in and get rid of waste, but with changes in your diet, a lot of times, or at least the American diet, we get nutrients in, but we don't always get nutrients out because there's, you know, deficits in plant products that'll help us sort of maintain water in our GI tract and keep the stool moving and empty us out, because, you know, if things start getting backed up in the GI tract, then you can be exposed to all kinds of things that may have been in your food, like pesticides and carcinogens. So you need to sort of keep the stuff coming in and keep the stuff coming out. Plus, if things sort of stay in there, you know, there's also things that can be inflammatory. And, you know, the GI tract, people don't always think about it, is sort of one of the key barriers between the outside world and our internal body. And if that barrier breaks down, then, you know, we're exposed to whatever is in the environment, whether it be bacteria or pesticides or other substances that could affect our brain. So, you know, keeping that part of our body healthy and keeping it, you know, full of appropriate bacteria is important.
That's great. So we're coming up to another break, and let's talk a little bit more about this whole topic, particularly, you know, our GI tract, and maybe even talk about sunlight a little bit when we come back. So listeners, you can find my show's Facebook page, Dr. Sarita Rao Radio Show, and find out more about upcoming guests and topics. So we will be back after this short break.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
It's a beautiful day.
Do you look your best? Do you feel your best? While everybody ages, why does it seem to show more in some people than others? It could have to do with what's inside and how it affects you outside. Tune in to Health and Beauty for Life with Dr. Tang and Alexandra. Their training in medicine and nutrition brings proven results with their patients. And now, they're ready to bring that knowledge to you. We'll answer your questions and explore innovations in technology and medicine to keep you looking and feeling your best. Tune in Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Women of all ages have a variety of health issues and challenges. No matter what they are, they basically come down to lifestyle choices. If you feel out of balance, take a look at the factors in your life. Stress, PMS, blood sugar problems, or eating on the run. You don't have to be at the mercy of your hormones. Tune in to Food for Thought with Meg Ricchici. Meg and her guests will take the mystery out of how you feel so that you stay well. Tune in every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Now, back to today's program.
You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. So today we are talking about a very interesting topic. It's a child psychiatry topic, but a little bit off the beaten path, the use of alternative medicine and integrative medicine in child and adolescent psychiatry. And our guest today is Dr. Tracy Krasnow, who is a child psychiatrist, who's also trained in pediatrics and adult psychiatry, and very knowledgeable about integrative medicine and integrative psychiatry. So Dr. Krasnow, what about sunlight? You know, we talked about melatonin and sleep earlier in the show. And we talked about how melatonin is actually the light dark hormone of our brain, not really a sleep agent. But light and dark regulates our circadian rhythm is about a lot more than just sleep and wakefulness, you know. And we all have this internal clock. So what are your thoughts about actually natural sunlight as a healing agent? Because we spend so much of our lives now away from natural light. I mean, if we're lucky enough to live in a house or work in an environment where there's windows, that's great. But, you know, our kids also spend now a lot of time indoors, more so than they did, you know, even 30 years ago, probably.
Yeah, vitamin D is, they always, you know, come up with, you know, different sort of hot topics or vitamins or hormones that are, and vitamin D has been one that's been sort of, it comes up again and again as sort of a, because I think there are so many people that sort of fall on both sides of the fence as far as not whether vitamin D is effective and necessary, but how do we get it and how do we get it safely? Because you know, our bodies naturally produce vitamin D, which is actually not just a vitamin; it's actually a hormone, which can you know activate a lot of different processes within the brain and in the immune system, and be very helpful to us. But how do you get it? And since the beginning of time, we've sort of gotten it from sunlight, and that's a natural way to get it. But in this day and age, everybody's very concerned and nervous about whether they're going to get skin cancer, and you know, lathering up with suntan lotion and things to protect themselves. And what they don't realize is that when they lather up with lotion, you know, they're cutting down their production of vitamin D to, you know, 1 to 2 or 3% of what they could be making. So I won't make any friends who are a dermatologist by saying this, but most of the studies that they've done on skin cancer show that, you know, getting safe sunlight and, you know, getting a tan safely is not necessarily linked to skin cancer, but in fact, actually getting sunburns is what is linked to sun cancer. So you should be getting enough sunlight in order to get your skin pink, but you shouldn't be getting any more than that. So, you know, after you get your sun exposure, then, you know, you can lather up with the suntan lotion and protect yourself. But we do need it. We need it every day. We need it, you know, multiple times a week. It can be supplemented, but there are some practitioners that would believe that it's better to get it naturally. And one of the philosophies or theories behind that is that vitamin D is actually built from cholesterol, and that it may actually lower your cholesterol if you get vitamin D naturally. You know, plus, you know, there have been, you know, studies for many, many years, especially about infection and things like that, and sort of natural protection from or improvement in patients that have things like tuberculosis or Influenza, you know, when they're exposed to sunlight, they activate their immune system and they fight these infections better on their own.
Right. Tuberculosis, that's right. I mean, I just know that, you know, being from India, that sunlight kills TB germs, you know. Yeah, that is so true. And also the effect of sunlight also coming in through our visual, you know, through our eyes, because that's how a lot of times it, you know, reaches parts of the brain and activates or, you know, adjusts for our circadian rhythm and the light dark, and morning light is considered better than afternoon light. What do you think about light therapy for depression? I mean, we recommend it. It's become mainstream. It's become very mainstream treatment. It's not an alternative treatment anymore. I don't know if it ever was for seasonal affective disorder, you know, people who get depressed in the winter and fall months. But I sometimes have recommended light therapy for patients who really aren't getting the full benefit from antidepressants. So maybe they can just try a light box. They're becoming less expensive now because we, in parts of the country, like, you know, Connecticut, from New England, you might have a lot of cloud cover even in the sunny months versus, like, let's say, the Southwest. So what do you think about light therapy as a treatment for depression? And do you think it has any role for anxiety?
I think it does. I think that, I mean, there's two pieces, I think, to light therapy. I mean, it does come back to the light in itself. And I think, you know, this... you know, some of this actually goes back to, you know, our animal roots, where, you know, to some extent, some people still have that drive to hibernate in the winter when it's cold and, you know, climb in bed and hide. So, you know, as the days get shorter, you know, you get those signals where, you know, I need to go sleep, I need to, you know, take some time off and stay away. But, you know, we can't really do that anymore. So, you know, certainly there have been benefits shown just by, you know, being exposed to light in general, and sort of telling the body, hey, wait, it's not really, well, it is winter, but not really here. Have some light, you know, and the brain says, oh, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to be sleeping.
yes.
I'll go back to normal. But on the other side of the thing, the coin there's also, again, comes up, you know, with vitamin D that, you know, light exposure, you know, creates vitamin D. And, you know, there have been some links and a lot of talk about, you know, vitamin D potentially showing improvement or helping people improve that are potentially experiencing treatment-resistant depression or different anxiety disorders. So, you know, there's those two different sides of it, but there's definitely a lot of merit there as far as treatment goes.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I wanted to ask you another question, which really doesn't have so much to do with alternative medicine per se, but just a different, more holistic approach to looking at our kids who have, you know, any kind of mental health issues. So, you know, a lot of times today, do you feel like there is much more of a we've moved in society in this direction where we really don't, tolerate or we don't accept, let's say we're less accepting of normal variation in our children, particularly in terms of developmental stages, you know, when they do certain things, when they start to talk, when they stop exhibiting or start exhibiting social anxiety or just ability to sit still, you know, just things like that. So, you know, I think of myself in my kindergarten class. I don't remember this, but I hear from my mother that I never sat down for the whole year. And, you know, back then, the teacher just sort of took it as, you know, okay, she's kind of young, she'll sit down in first grade, and as long as I learn things, they just kind of went with it. But today I probably would have been evaluated for ADHD. So do you think we're moving too much in a direction of, you know, expecting our children to follow certain, you know, specific paths, or, and then we have to balance that because we don't want the parent whose child is not speaking to wait too long when they could use, you know, interventions like speech therapy to help them. So do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, you know, it is can be a slippery slope where you really have to stay grounded in what's normal development and you know, certainly realize that attention certainly improves as you age, and there are preschool kids that you certainly can't expect to sit for very long and pay attention, which in the wisdom of our predecessors, I think that's in some ways why they set up the school system the way it is, that that the kindergartners are sort of, the 5-year olds are sort of at that age where they can start to sort of tolerate small periods of direct focus in a classroom, and attend enough to learn things from a teacher and not disrupt other kids. So it's a balance. I mean, certainly it's something we always look at and we say, is this normal? Is this not normal? And it really comes down to functioning and, are they, able to learn what they need to learn? There's nothing wrong with, keeping an eye on it before sort of necessarily treating it, or, we don't necessarily have to, jump to conclusions that this is ADHD. There's plenty of testing out there and things like that that you can give to different children to see what their attention is like, or their ability to use their executive functioning and those sorts of skills that would be deficient in things like ADHD.
Right, right. And as adults, many of us, use caffeine as a, we don't even think about it because it's just a social thing, We drink coffee, tea, those are full of antioxidants, but they can also leave you, jittery and anxious if you drink too much. But, but those are kind of like, caffeine is a stimulant, basically, and it's not something that we typically allow our children to have, unless they have their occasional soda or something. So you wonder, as adults, we might be modulating some of our attention span also through caffeine and not even realizing it.
Very true. And certainly, there's other, issues there, that, may not even be, certainly some of them could be, related to adult ADHD, but there's lots of other issues that affect our attention, like sleep deprivation and stress and things like that make us more tired and give us difficulty paying attention. And certainly one of the things that a lot of people don't know about stimulants is whether you have ADHD or not, they certainly work to improve your attention. You certainly want to make sure that you're, treating the right thing before you, intervene with medications, because, they do work regardless of whether you have the illness or not.
That is so true. That is such an important point, because most people don't really know that. They figure that if you're responding to any kind of stimulant, then you probably have ADHD. But look at how many of our adolescents start out, our teenagers start out abusing stimulants because they, get them for exams in high school and college. And some of them never go on to develop any, addiction to them, but other people do. But there's a lot of trading and buying of stimulants for studying in college campuses, among our young adults and our older teens, that sometimes people are just in denial of that.
Absolutely.
So what about, yoga, martial arts? Do you ever recommend things like that for kids to help them focus or calm them down, or anything else?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly aerobic exercise in general increases endorphins and serotonin and are natural antidepressants and anti-anxiety ways of treating those things. All of those sort of things like yoga and tai chi and things like that are, disciplined and help, focus attention and help us relax and, relax our muscles and our bodies in general and help us sort of unwind. So I think they're definitely should be part of, you know, any sort of treatment plan.
Also, the use of music and art, you know, that can also help children sometimes, you know, to focus, calm down, de-stress, and just sort of connect to a part of their brain that they may not be, you know, using quite as actively, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. There was a lot of talk at one point, or there were studies at one point on Baroque classical music, and that the body actually tried, all of our body processes sort of try to line up with the beat of the music, so our hearts and our minds sort of, you know, focus to the music. So there's something to be said even about, you know, music therapy.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been a great guest. I learned so much today, and I'm sure our listeners will too. So thank you, everyone, for listening today to Dr. Tracy Krasnow, who was our guest on the show. You're listening to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. You can find my show's Facebook page, Dr. Sarita Rao Radio Show, and find out more about upcoming guests and topics. Dr. Krasnow, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you again for tuning in to Mental Health with Dr. Sarita Rao. Please join us again next Thursday morning at 6 a.m. Pacific Time and 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.